Welcome back to the Dan Prof Show. Continuing our discussion of schools in the era of COVID-19 that we had in significant measure with Dr. Kevin Pham at the top of the hour. You have pressure coming from a couple of different directions on Democrat governors and big city mayors. The one direction, you have parents who want their kids back in school, particularly families who are not rich, who need their kids back in school, even if right now those schools are not providing exactly the kind of education parents of those children would like to have happen, per our conversation yesterday about starving the Minotaur. Don't look for an opportunity to get your kids back into these totalitarian re-education centers. Look for the opportunity now to get them out and into a private school setting that perhaps is more aligned with your values and more acts in partnership with the parents rather than in opposition to the parents. So there's pressure in one direction from parents. There's pressure in another direction on particularly, again, Dem politicians from the teachers unions. And we've seen the teachers unions have won the day in big cities like Chicago and L.A. They haven't quite won the day in New York, but they haven't quite given up either. And it seems to me what we could see happen as more schools kneel before fear and the power politics of the teachers union is what we saw happen in Montgomery County, Maryland, although there was an intercession by the governor there, Larry Hogan, which is, hey, if public schools can't do or won't do, really, but they'll characterize it as can't do in-person classroom instruction, then nobody can, because we don't want the private school kids getting even further ahead of the public school kids than they already are. That's not fair. That's not equitable. Even though we've done it to ourselves, we want to do it to them too. That would not exactly be novel in terms of a philosophical position on policymaking from the Jacobin left. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Jim Bovard, author of 10 books, member of the USA Today Board of Contributors, frequent contributor to The Hill, and a contributing editor for American Conservative, who wrote about Montgomery County, Maryland. Jim Bovard, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me back on, Dan.
So we covered it when Larry Hogan issued the order on that public health director that said, you're not going to be fining private schools for doing in-person instruction with their students. But boy, when you give a public health bureaucrat an inch, he certainly tries to take a mile, as happened there.
Yeah, it was a very bizarre fight, and I was glad to see the governor push back on this. Governor Hogan's is a lot better than the local politicians who have dictatorial power here. What fascinated me was that the health czar here, Travis Gales, said that he was entitled to shut down all private schools if there were more than 8 new COVID cases per day here in this county. This county's got 1 million people. So 8 new cases would be a COVID positive rate of 0.000008%. That's almost nothing. And, you know, it could be 8 cases in a nursing home. But still, this is all it takes for the health czar here to claim absolute power to ban private learning. And it's bizarre.
And, of course, I know a man of science as the commissioner there is. Certainly, there was a scientific basis for the magic number 8.
Well, I think that the scientific basis is basically consists of the guy standing there and waving his fingers in the air, science and data. Mm-hmm. And people around here are so docile, you know, people say, oh, they have data. Okay, I guess we have to submit, let them have absolute power. But it's interesting, almost all the press coverage on this controversy, both in favor of the local government and opposed to it, almost nobody looked at the actual data number that he was using to justify his absolute power.
Jim, you're questioning an expert. That is not your place. You are not a public health director. He is. He has that title. Therefore, his diktats are beyond reproach.
Well, I've spent decades exposing the lies and power grabs of government officials. And yeah, I didn't go to medical school, but I also have got a BS radar. The shutdown schools based on 8 people out of 1 million, when those 8 people probably aren't even going to be in class. But part of what fascinates me with the liberal narrative here is how they've simply washed away the horrendous adverse impact on minority children, on low-income children.
Yeah.
These school shutdowns have been a complete disaster. politicians in this county have forever preached about the sacred duty to close the achievement gap. What about that stuff? I mean, that simply was tossed overboard when they decided to shut down the schools, because my impression is that they haven't made any statements about whether the so-called achievement gap is increasing. But in the eastern part of this county, there are a lot of low to moderate income folks. Those are households that might be single parent, or they might have parents who need to work. And they don't have the tiger mom there beating the kid over the head, you know, do your reading. So it's going to be a complete disaster, and they'll probably use that to justify raising property taxes to spend more money on schools.
Yeah, I'm going to pick up there with respect to those achievement gaps when we come back, and I wish GM would be scrambled to build more BS detectors for distribution than ventilators at this juncture. More with Jim Bovard. He is the author of 10 books, member of USA Today Board of Contributors, and a contributing editor to the American Conservative. We'll be right back.
Dr. My eyes, they cannot see the sky. Is this the prize?
Grab a good seat and sharpen your pencils. Class is in session with Professor Dan Proft and the Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to the program. We're speaking with Jim Bovard. He is an author of 10 books, member of the USA Today Board of Contributors, frequent contributor to TheHill.com, and a contributing editor at TheAmericanConservative.com. And we were talking about schooling in the age of COVID. And you were talking about the achievement gap between students of different races. And there's a lot of concern always and lip service paid by school officials to closing that achievement gap. You know, one of the things that's been interesting about this is I haven't heard from the teachers unions. I haven't heard from any advocates for, you know, the blank check spending for K through 12 education that remote learning is even comparable to in classroom learning, that there's no real difference, that you're not going to see a decline in the speed of the intellectual and social growth of students with this in-person learning. They've all but conceded the point that we know based on the academic research on the topic that it is a worse educational situation for children. But they can't talk about that because then it'll look like they just care about themselves and not about doing their jobs.
Well, yeah, and I'm happy to see there have been some good stories in the newspapers on this recently. The Wall Street Journal whacked it. The Baltimore Sun had a good piece on this. But according to McKinsey and consultants, some of the best, most respected consultants in the country, the schools are kept solely online until January. Average white student loses 6 months of learning. Hispanic students 9 months. Black students 10 months. So this is a horrendous increase in the achievement gap, which was already in many areas, certainly in Montgomery County, it was huge. And I don't understand how the teachers can claim that they have a right to get a salary and stay home at the same time you've got all these grocery store workers who are, okay, you know, life has a risk. There was a great saying by Thoreau, a man sits as many risks as he runs. And but if you're a government employee for the schools, you get your salary and you get to protest and act like you're a martyr simply because you're staying home and getting your salary because the kids are too dangerous to be around. If that's how you feel, then okay, quit and don't get paid. But that's not what they're looking for.
Right. And again, this seems to me an opportunity for a more expansive discussion about opportunity scholarships, about school choice. There has been some movement at the federal level in the proposed COVID phase four relief package that Senate Republicans rolled out. 10% of the $105 billion that was allocated would be, if it ever makes its way to law, for opportunity scholarships for kids that are low income in schools that are closed. Well, if it's good now, then why isn't it good all the time? And it seems to me this is a real opportunity for not private schools, private school systems, school choice advocates across the political spectrum to be making the case to essentially exercise your power and don't just take what the government school system gives you. If the opportunity presents itself with the resources you need so that you have the same choice as richer people, then take advantage of the opportunity, use those resources, and let's advocate for the distribution of those resources.
Yeah, I mean, it would be one positive aspect of the school shutdowns if far more parents yanked their kids out of public schools. I think back to my own time in public schools. It was the most brain-deadening experience of my life. it was even worse than the summer I spent working for the Virginia Highway Department leaning on a shovel. I mean, parents should do what they can to get their kids out, but hopefully this also wakes up parents not to trust the schools, especially government schools, to educate their kids. Because the government doesn't have an incentive to have, citizens who are wide awake and have those BS radars. Instead, the government's incentive is to have people who keep paying and obeying. And that's what the schools have produced.
You know, we spend a lot of time talking about K-12 education as well. We should. But also what's happening at the collegiate level. That's important, too. And this idea of sending kids back to a college campus so they can sit in their dorm room and take classes online while paying full freight. You know, there's ostensibly a reckoning coming at the post-secondary level, too, and that's long overdue.
Absolutely. I mean, colleges have become insanely overpriced. I did a story on this a year or two ago that looked at how college students these days do far less work each week than they did even 40, 50 years ago. I mean, work on classes, work in the library. I mean, it's far more of a Club Med experience now than it was back in the 1970s. In some cases it ruins the kids for life because they get used to, this very lavish cuisine. And they graduate and like, oh, okay, well, I guess I can't afford lobster anymore. Life is unfair.
And the only group of individuals on a college campus who do less work than the students are the professors. And what exactly is the, how exactly is the compensation scheme and thus in part, the tuition price justified, particularly when you start attaching a return on investment to it for various majors? Then it gets really daunting to explain this away. And it seems to me, again, opportunities, crises presenting opportunities. It's an opportunity at the federal level to start putting some colleges on the spot, particularly those well-heeled colleges, and say, we're not going to subsidize this anymore through federal student loan program to get them to do what their state governments won't and can't get them to do, which is, right-size the way their university operates if it's going to continue to.
Well, the federal subsidies, the subsidized loans, have had a horrendous adverse impact on colleges because it's basically free money, and the colleges have responded by doing basically whatever they want, hiring vast numbers of bureaucrats, and lowering standards because the colleges are hooked on those subsidies, and they're not going to fail the students who shouldn't be there because that would cut down the subsidies. So, I mean, it's just like it's like a circle. It's like dominoes falling, and each thing lowers the standards even further.
He is James Bovard, author of 10 books, member of the USA Today Board of Contributors, contributor to TheHill.com, contributing editor to TheAmericanConservative.com. Jim, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much.
Take care.
The more you'll know, this is the Dan Prof Show.